How are you?
I'm good. How's things? Can I just get you to introduce yourself and tell me just a small bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, my name is Jack Cruz. I'm a neurosurgeon in the United States. When I started on my journey, I started off as a pretty unhealthy person about 10 years ago and had an epiphany after I injured my knee. And I began to start to use the principles of the laws of nature, semiconduction, cold, and to try to fix myself. And what I found is that all the things that I learned about in medicine, I had to kind of reject. And I started to use some very counterintuitive mechanisms to reverse my obesity and my illness. And what I found is that I was able to do it. And when I did it on myself, I thought, well, is this a coincidence, the placebo effect, or something else? And then I did it in my son and my couple people in my family. And then I started to apply some of this to my patients. And it became so overwhelming success, probably from 06 to 08, that one of my fellow colleagues, a physician in our lounge, he's a gastroenterologist, said, "Jack, you kind of need to write some of this stuff down and just start putting it on the internet." So I started writing up blogs probably around, I'd say, 2009, and just started categorizing based on this document that I have on my website called The Quilt. And I just started laying them out piece by piece to try to teach people how the microcosm of quantum physics ties into the macrocosm of our life. And I guess it got to be pretty popular because the website and the blogs become popular, and I guess I've become a lightning rod, within the ancestral community for some of the things that I believe. And my real goal now is just to share what I've learned with people and allow them to examine it for themselves and decide, is this something that makes sense to me or not?
Perfect. I'm obviously a huge fan of yours. Just before I jump into the architecture, I'd like some background. So could you speak about cold adaptation and why it is important?
Well, cold adaption, I guess, gave to the paleosphere, PaleoFX in Austin 2 years ago. And I never mentioned it back then. Most people in the paleosphere, called it a hormetic effect, but it's really not. If you understand that biology works on semiconduction, as Robert O. Becker, who's an orthopedic surgeon in the United States, found in the 1950s and 60s, that bone uses the photoelectric effect to actually regenerate, you begin to realize that semiconduction is really important. But one of the things that people don't know, because let's face it, most biologists, physicians, or biochemists don't know a lot about quantum physics, is that in semiconduction, when you introduce cold, that increases the current of flow in a semiconductor. This is completely different than what happens in your house. With either electric currents in the wall or with ionic currents that are present in cells. And that's the reason why it seems counterintuitive to people why cold would be very beneficial to a living system. So I brought that out at PaleoFX, and then I got into the cold thermogenesis series on my blog, and I started to explain to people that when you improve the current of flow in your inner mitochondrial membrane, basically what you're doing is you're invoking some of Einstein's principles of energy and mass equivalence. And Einstein said back in the 20s, anything that increases energy basically is good for life. And that's what cold is all about, because it increases the current flow in all different semiconductors in your body. It's going to improve your health and wellness quotient and diminish your sickness quotient. And let's face it, that's kind of what we're all interested in. None of us are really interested in having surgery or getting sick.
Okay, that's perfect. Could you just maybe outline quickly how you transformed your own body with cold?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I did, if you go to my website at jackcruz.com, I have a thing called an easy start guide. And in the easy start guide has the two major founding principles. The first one is the leptin prescription, which basically works on circadian biology. And the second one is called the cold thermogenesis protocol. And generally, how I transform my bodies, I basically used these two prescriptions that I came up with. And how did I come up with both of them? Basically, all life is fundamentally based on the laws of nature. The three laws of nature are the photoelectric effect from Einstein, water chemistry, and electromagnetic field effects. And to prove the point further, Lorcan, that if you look at what NASA in our country says, life on Earth exists because we have an abundance of those three things. We have water, we have the photoelectric effect, and we have the magnetic field. Our nearest neighbor, Mars, has two out of three. It has light, it has water that's frozen at the poles, but it has no magnetic field. Therefore, it's a dead red planet. That's a desert. And that should be the starting point of where you begin to understand how the leptin prescription works. The leptin prescription basically is telling you it's codifying food into the photoelectric effect. Food grows certain cycles when the sun is longest. For example, carbohydrates grow when the sun cycles are longest. They don't grow when they're the shortest. Therefore, we need to eat based on circadian cycling. Why is this important? Why is timing more important than actually what we eat? Because in front of every gene in the human body is something called a molecular clock gene. And this is true in every single mammal that's on this planet. When you begin to understand that every single gene is preceded by a molecular clock gene, you start to realize that maybe circadian biology is important, and maybe the brain is paying deep attention to these three major factors of nature. And what I found, that's exactly the case. So I constructed a prescription called the leptin prescription that basically makes this fairly easy to understand. At the same time, I realized that cold would actually improve my current of flow. When I was 360 pounds as an obese man, I realized that my body was suffering from an energy deficit or an energy deficient state. And that's really what obesity is. It's an inflammatory brain condition that leads to an energy deficient state where I'm losing photons and electrons to the environment and not keeping them in my mitochondria. When I employed the cold in doing that, what I magically saw is that I increased the energy in my body. And when I speak about energy, I'm not talking about the woo-woo stuff that, you know, a lot of alternative energy practitioners talk about. But I'm actually physically talking about the flow of electrons and protons on my inner mitochondrial membrane. What I found is that this diminished the inflammatory cytokines in my body. So inflammation dropped not only in my brain, but also in my body. And I proved this by doing labs on myself. And the more that I increased the current of flow in my body, the faster I lost weight. And it dawned on me very, very quickly that I was basically using Einstein's laws to determine why I was obese and how to reverse it. And then I started to realize that as a neurosurgeon, I knew the laws of biology and I knew the laws of chemistry, but I really didn't know Einstein's laws or math very well. So I undertook learning about quantum electrodynamic theory for about 3 years. And what I found pretty much revolutionized what I believed all life was based on. And that's where I came up with my quilt document and the 30 different parts that I believe are very important in terms of how biology and chemistry decipher and use those three laws of nature. And in my case, I went from 357 pounds. I lost 77 pounds in 3 months, and then I lost 133 pounds in 11 months. And after about 18 months, I've been at 200 pounds ever since. And I've been there And slowly over that time frame, I've been decreasing my body fat percentage and increasing my lean muscle mass. And all of that effect is due to, you know, Einstein's equation, E equals MC squared. The more energy is in my system, the less problems I had. In other words, my health quotient increased and my disease quotient decreased.
Excellent. Just leading on from that, artificial light touched on it there partly on circadian rhythms, but maybe if you explain the effects of artificial light on the body as such.
Well, that's an actual simple one. And this goes to one of the laws of nature, which is the photoelectric effect. Most people will not have to be convinced of this. When we get up in the morning, generally the sun rises, and we go to bed at night, the sun is usually set. So all biology pays attention to light and dark cycles. What people don't realize is that your brain is exquisitely wired to that. When the sun rises, cortisol is designed to be high. And when the sun sets, melatonin is supposed to rise. The problem that we have with artificial light, since it's man-made light, it doesn't follow the same spectrum that natural light from the sun does. And most people know that sunlight contains photons and electrons, and that's where the photoelectric effect comes from. Visible light does not equal artificial light. So artificial light from incandescent bulbs, fluorescent bulbs, from our computers, from our iPhones, from iPads, from you name it, from street lamps, even from the electric sockets in your house, produce a very, very blue light. And blue light completely destroys the melatonin and cortisol cycle. Now, how does this effect play a role? Anytime the cortisol and melatonin cycles off, it means that your brain cannot tell night and day accurately. And if you remember what I just said earlier, that in front of every single gene in the body is a molecular clock cell, or I should say a molecular clock gene. If you can't tell time well, that means your genetic expression will not occur spot on time. So I make an analogy for this, like the UPS or FedEx delivery men, which is, you know, the mailman. If your listeners are not from the States, they may not know who that is. If all your arrivals and deliveries come at the same time, it's going to create chaos, you know, in the distribution center before they can be sent out. Well, the same exact thing happens in our cells. And when this happens in our cells and cortisol and melatonin are altered, it causes molecular crowding in the cell. Molecular crowding is another acronym or a synonym for inflammation. And when inflammation occurs, it causes two chemicals in the brain to spike. Those are NF-kappa beta and IL-6. When those two things spike, it begins to change transmembrane resting potential of neurons. And this is what leads the cascade of causing a circadian mismatch. How can we tell that? Well, when you're a neurosurgeon or a neurologist, you can put electrodes on someone's head and you can correlate their differences between their cortisol cycle and melatonin cycle with their EEG strips, which is their electroencephalogram. And what we started to find out is that the electroencephalogram of all animals is directly tied to both the light cycle and the electromagnetic spectrum of the environment they live in. And it's really important when it comes to the electromagnetic field that we live in, because it appears that the alpha wave in the human brain is directly tied to the circadian signal of the Schumann resonance from the magnetic field of the Earth. And that's designed to resonate at 7.83 hertz. So let's just say, for argument's sake, you have an iPhone, a laptop, satellite TV, and your girlfriend, I don't know, say likes to listen to music at night. You have all that excessive electromagnetic radiation in your environment that can block that Schumann resonance coming from the Earth's magnetic field. If it blocks it, that means your brain can't perceive it, and those molecular clocks in front of your genes do not work properly. And that alteration in time then creates molecular chaos in your cells. And that molecular chaos in cells is what causes the diseases that seem to confound my profession these days. And it's part of the reason why we're seeing an explosion of Neolithic diseases, you know, not only in the United States, but everywhere in the world. We see it probably more in the States because, let's face it, we're the technology kings of the world. This is where most of the technology in the world is made. But now that we're 30, 40 years into the technology boom and the revolution, I mean, in Australia, in Europe, in Africa, I mean, every part of the world, there's semiconductor factories, technologies used worldwide now. I mean, we're talking on Skype. There you go. There's the internet there. So it's really now touched all of us. And what I think people don't understand is that man has changed the electromagnetic environment more in the last 120 years than we've ever fathomed. In fact, NASA has reported data that we have more electromagnetic radiation on the surface of the Earth between the Earth's surface and the ionosphere than there is on the surface of the sun. And when you think about that, that is absolutely staggering considering the output of the sun.
That is crazy. Yeah, you kind of jumped ahead of me questions-wise, which is perfect. Then I was going to talk about TVs, microwaves, laptops, and Wi-Fi within the house. And how it affects, but I think you pretty much got into that.
So, well, I would tell you that it has a huge effect, but what one of the main things I would tell people, you know, who are listening to this, if they want to learn more about EMF specifically, especially Wi-Fi, because that's one of our biggest risks, I wrote a blog post on my site on March 15, 2013 called the EMF FAQs. I would tell people to read through that so they can look at really what some of the major effects of EMF are. But the number one effect that I would tell you that we could discuss is that excessive EMFs basically dehydrate our body. So one of the way your listeners could find out if this was affecting them pretty simply is here in the States, we have a basic chemistry called the Chem-7 that most doctors, I think, worldwide use. And we measure something called the BUN and creatinine ratio. When someone's dehydrated, their BUN creatinine ratio rises. So you could actually go get this test done with your doctor and look at it. Generally, a healthy BUN creatinine ratio should be below 7 to 1. If your ratio is above 10 to 1 or 15 to 1, you know you likely live in a field that's markedly altered. And then you may need to start to look at the environment you're living in a little bit more closely and then begin to change some of those things. And on my site for my members, we actually did an EMF boot camp that covered, you know, seven different lectures from an EMF environmental engineer. But I go through, you know, even on my blog and on my forum with my members, some of the common things that I did when I learned about these things. I basically turn the electric panel off at night when I sleep. I also happen to sleep on a mattress that's filled with magnets called a magnetico sleep mattress to improve the electromagnetic field in my own bedroom because, as you know, in most houses in the United States, our power grid runs on a 60 hertz frequency. Well, I mentioned to you the human resonance goes between 0 and 30 hertz. Well, if you have a 60 hertz frequency through your house, that means you're automatically blocking it right then and there. And I know the standards in Europe and in Australia are quite a bit different than what they are here, but I can guarantee to you that the electric frequencies everywhere in the world is above the Schumann resonance. So that means all of us carry this risk. And that's just one of the common ways that you may be able to change your field. You know, turning off the lights, turning off the Wi-Fi, going back to, you know, a hardwired computer, getting rid of your cell phone. Don't talking with your cell phone up to the side of your head. You know, use the speaker function. I also, you know, got rid of all fluorescent lights because those were the worst lights to have. I don't watch any TV after night. When the sun sets, it goes off. I also use amber glasses called blue blocker glasses. Here in the States, we have a home improvement store called Home Depot or Lowe's, and they sell these DeWalt glasses that most contractors use. They only cost about $10, and they do a pretty good job of blocking out blue light. There's a program on the internet for computers called Efflux that you can put on your computer that knocks down the amount of blue light that's out there. You basically want to live your life a little bit better with those three principles of nature, namely the photoelectric effect, water chemistry, and the electromagnetic field. If you use those as your biologic straight edge, I will promise you over time that you will notice that your health will improve. The problem is we got to get away from our beliefs as man and our beliefs, you know, from medicine, from healthcare, and even from our own parents that we think are healthy. If you start to use nature's laws to dictate the decisions that you make in life, what you'll magically start to find out is that you'll begin to make better choices. And when you make better choices, when you say that to a brain surgeon like me, that means that your dopamine level is rising in your head. It means your cortisol cycles better. It means your melatonin's better. It means your testosterone, progesterone, estradiol, pregnenolone, and everything else is extremely optimized, you know, for your biology, and eventually you can help yourself.
Okay, that's some great tips there. So onto domestic design. If you were to build a house in the morning, I think you've mentioned something about a man cave before. What features would you have in the house, and what would be very important? Like something, for example, not even having electricity wired into the house, only having a separate room for it, or any other factors that you would consider?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting that you're asking me about this, because I don't know if you or a lot of your listeners know this, but I did probably my biggest biohack ever over the last 3 years. I used to live in Nashville, Tennessee, which, you know, is a southern town in the States. But in 1999, they built a fiber optic ring. They actually built two of them, one around the inner portion of the city and then one around the outer portion of the city. And through my testing, I found out that the city of Nashville was not a good place to live from an electromagnetic standpoint. And I found this out because of the detailed testing I did. Well, I made a decision pretty early on that I was probably going to have to move because of that situation. I also tested my house and found that my house had some pretty unusual readings that I felt potentially were affecting my biology and also the biology of my family. So I began to start thinking about these questions about, okay, if I actually relocated and moved, where would I move, and how would I build a new house? So I've been in my new place now. I live very close to the Gulf of Mexico, very close to the crater that hit our planet that wiped out the dinosaurs and where mammals came from, that's loaded with seafood. And I built the house, and this house is designed very differently than the one I had in Nashville. I live out in the country. My next door neighbor owns 2,500 acres that he has cows and animals on. You cannot get a Wi-Fi signal in my house. You have to actually walk out 3 acres to the street just to talk on your cell phone. I have a well that goes into the ground that pulls natural spring water out of the ground. I use that for my house water. I also use it to water the grass that I walk in with bare feet every day. I limited and shielded just about all the electrical panels that I could in my house. I have turn off and break off switches for everything in my room. My room is pitch black at night. It has Lutron shades that block out the light. I have complete access to probably the best seafood on the planet. I have great access to grass-fed meat. I basically get out in the sun a lot. I use a lot of CT. I built a pool that actually has a CT deck on it. I'm trying to think some of the other special things I did. That's but I think actually, those are some. Oh, and my house doesn't have a my house doesn't have a microwave oven either.
Oh my God! Yeah, where I'm living at the moment, everyone uses the microwave, and it kills me. to even think about it. Other points that I was considering would be like putting the lights low down a post on the ceiling and using particular types that would reflect light away from you. Or would you go as far as not putting lights in the house at all?
I turn the lights off in my house, but I will tell you this, what I did in Nashville, and I don't do it here, but I think this is like a good thing that you could consider, is use amber light bulbs. Like here in the States, they sell amber bulbs everywhere. And amber bulbs, if you're going to have light on, say you want to read or you have to do some work for your job at night, you can do that. In fact, when I made the change, you know, back 8-10 years ago, I used to walk around with a red laser on a baseball cap. And that's how I navigated and read at night. My wife used to laugh at me because she thought I was crazy. But I did that for a long period of time. Now I find that I just don't do a lot at night. At nighttime, maybe the most important thing I do is probably read. But I tend to get most of my stuff done during light hours, and I tend to do it outside. One of the major benefits of living where I do in the southern United States along the Gulf is that I get a huge benefit from the photoelectric effect, you know, pretty much 8 or 9 months out of the year. The problem that it presents for me is CT here. I have to, you know, have a commercial grade ice maker, and I dump it right on top of myself on my pool deck. And when I'm finished doing that, then I use the power of the sun to develop the photoelectric effect through my own skin. And the nice thing about living down here is I only need 20 to 30 minutes in the sun to really get my vitamin D levels up, you know, where I want them, to between 70 and 90 nanograms per deciliter. And the CT, now I'm at the point now where I only need to do it probably 20 to 30 minutes at a day, and a lot of times I'll break it up into morning and afternoon sessions. And this time of the year, since, you know, I'm in the northern hemisphere, and it's pretty hot here in August, I don't have to do as much CT, but CT really starts to ramp up for me in September, October, and November. I mean, when it's December in the northern hemisphere, that's when you'll find me completely packed in 160 pounds ice.
Jenny, don't get jealous now, Jack, but I'm actually up a mountain in a ski field at the moment. But one point that I have, I'm in the cold during the day, and but at night time, what temperatures should you sleep at, really? Because I find my building so, so warm.
As cold as you can tolerate. Well, I would tell you, as cold as you can tolerate. I mean, if you ever talk to my wife, you would laugh. We just went through this last night. I went to bed early last night for me, probably around 9 o'clock, because I had surgeries this morning, and my wife got into bed, and she's like, God, it's so cold in here, because I turned down, as soon as I come home, I turned down the air conditioner to about 50 degrees. So when you go into my bedroom, the doors actually slam closed because of, you know, the wind power behind the air conditioners that are in there. And when we get in there, she gets under the blankets, and she crawls next to me, and she goes, you feel like the sun, you're radiating heat. And I said, that's exactly what a polar bear does. That's the reason why my pilot light's turned on and hers isn't. And she's beginning to understand why I do certain things I do. I told her, because I'm absorbing the power of the photoelectric effect from my food and from the sun, and then preserving that charge utilizing CT, I'm able to radiate it when I'm in an environment that calls for it. And that's exactly the way a polar bear is able to jump in the Arctic Ocean or the Antarctic Ocean, because they can turn on their thyroid gland to make free T3 to couple with uncoupling protein 1 to burn calories as free heat. And that's exactly what I do. That's actually how I maintain my weight now. I don't really pay attention to anything I eat any longer, but when people ask me, well, how do I eat? I eat like a great white shark. The most important thing to me is I eat a lot of fat, a lot of protein, very little carbs, even in the summertime. I would say this is probably the time of the year around June 21st that I eat the most carbs. But I'm already ramping my carb level down. And I mean, it's August 16th today, and we're still in the height of the summer. but I'm starting to ramp that down and upping the amount of, you know, fats in my diet. I've been doing this for a long time, and, you know, when you feel as good as I feel, it's really kind of hard to change the template that you're doing. And I guess what I'm trying to get people to understand, this isn't my philosophy. You know, it really isn't Jack Cruz's rules. I'm using the rules of nature, these three major effects that we've talked about, and I'm codifying that in my food, in my leptin prescription, and basically trying to explain to the world how these three factors are codified into these prescriptions. And when you begin to understand that cold temperature between 50 and 55 degrees stimulates melatonin, well, that actually helps you sleep. And when it helps you sleep, sleep is when autophagy happens. Autophagy is when we recycle all the proteins in our bodies to keep us young and keep us fit, keep us well. That's the reason that I do these things. The cold, I guess 10 years ago, did bother me, but the cold doesn't bother me anymore. When I do CT, CT doesn't bother me either. I try to tell people who haven't tried it, after you do my cold adaption that's on the website, fairly quickly, you'll realize this isn't as hard as you think, you know, and you can do it in your own bathroom at home.
Yeah, my own personal favorite was in the sea in Ireland, in both Waterford and Dublin. On that note, on warm water, you know, when people shower, they generally have like a warm to hot showers. Is this really working against cold heat? Because that's where I think if you're designing a house and you only have cold showers, you won't have a problem with it. But when you have the option of warm to cold, then you just go for the warm, if that makes sense.
Well, I would actually tell you that I think there is a hormetic benefit from warm to cold and cold to warm. But I think that benefit happens after you limit the inflammation in your body. So, for example, I think when you're unhealthy, like when you were where I was 10 years ago, warm baths weren't doing anything except stimulating inflammatory chemicals. And let me explain something to you, Lorcan, so you understand. The human brain works on temperature cycles. A lot of people don't know this. When we go to sleep at night, melatonin secretion is maximal in the brain when our body temperature falls 1 or 2 degrees. And what controls that is our hypothalamus. And this is the same part of the brain that controls energy balance, you know, from your diet. So if you can't tell proper light and dark, you can't drop your body temperature to get that optimal melatonin secretion. Conversely, when someone gets sick, like say they're in the hospital and they have a bad infection, your temperature goes up. What does that do? It increases your basal metabolic rate almost 13% for every degree it goes up. And this stimulates huge amounts of inflammatory cytokines. Now, we generally like our temperature to go up when our immune system needs to be stimulated, but every degree that it goes up, it raises your basal metabolic rate 13%. So what you're effectively doing is actually hurting your body. Just think about it. A normal temperature, you know, at least in my clinic, is about 97.2, all the way up to 98.5. Well, if you have a temperature of 103, I basically just told you that your basal metabolic rate may have shot up 50, 60%. That's equivalent to somebody going out and running a 26-mile marathon. So this is why you need to understand that temperature has a huge effect. Now, if you're taking, say, a warm shower over 3 to 5 minutes or, say, a warm bath or a sauna, I don't think that's going to hurt you because I think the fluctuation of the temperature up and down is actually almost a way to look at stimulation of your neuroimmune system in your body because you're giving it different environmental signals, and your brain is a quantum computer that's really designed to sense the environment. So I think when someone is healthy, I think there is a benefit to using warm and cold together. But when you're sick, cold becomes the primordial ticket. And the reason for that is because cold improves semiconduction in the body. And when you begin to realize some of the science that Dr. Becker found out, that the regenerative DC current in our body comes from, you know, Schwann cells and microglia cells in our brain, and this improves with the cold, then you begin to understand maybe there's some magic to this.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, next topic that I was actually reading in your book there last night, recovery from surgery and kind of sports recovery. What are your protocols that you really home in? That's when I find it so important to really, really focus in on nutrition and cold is when you're recovering from sports or from injury. So maybe you could go through them.
Well, yeah, we've got quite a few. I'll tell you what I've got published on the blog is probably what I would call the third grade reading level. It really talks more about some of the food and the hormones. What I would tell you there, those are the ones that most people can control. But are there certain things that I do as a physician with my patients that are quite a bit different? Yeah, I actually use cold 2 to 3 weeks before the surgery to actually upregulate their immune system and their regenerative potential. I also like to optimize their hormones before we operate. And I do talk about that a little bit in terms of progesterone, testosterone, vitamin D, things like that, because it has huge effects on our healing potential. But here's the other one that I haven't really talked a lot about either in my book, the blog, or the forum, but I did do a recent podcast with a triathlete who's really interested in this, is the use of red light therapy. Remember before we talked about blue light really demolishing the melatonin and cortisol cycle in the brain. One of the things that we have found in circadian biology and chronobiology and also in training is that red light therapy has a huge benefit for athletes that are trying to recover. I'll share with you some of the really unusual things that people are beginning to do. There's a doctor, and I can't remember his exact name. I believe his name is Fry. He's now using red light therapy to deliver through the nostril, through the base of the brain, insulin to diabetics, utilizing red light alone. And the reason this works is red light therapy is very powerful, has a very powerful photoelectric effect in neurons. And when you use the neurons in the nose, these in the central nervous system of humans, there's what we call a first order neuron. In other words, there's not a lot of connections to the cerebral cortex. There's only one connection from the nose all the way up. And he's using this as a direct pathway in to modulate the effect of hormones and recovery. Well, there's another doctor at Stanford University who's a researcher. His name's Louis De Lucia, and he's actually using photo optics to do the same thing in the hypothalamus, utilizing red and yellow light. When I started reading about this stuff 5-6 years ago, I got the idea that maybe when I started to operate on people and I had them cut open, especially like their head, the surface of the brain is a lot different than the surface of other organs in the body. The cortex cells are the ones that control kind of most of our functions. And the stuff that's deep in the brain is like the white matter tracts or the wires, you know, that you would see in a house. So I got the idea that if I was taking a brain tumor out on someone, what effect would it have on shining, you know, red light or red lasers over the surface of the brain before I closed up the head? And lo and behold, I started to notice that when I did this, I would check people's vitamin D levels postoperatively or check their progesterone level postoperatively. I found they were much higher in people that I did this in and ones I didn't. You know, and shining red light on somebody is not, you know, no one's going to think that's going to hurt anybody. And I started to realize that here in the States that Major League Baseball players, hockey players, and football players were going to different alternative energy physicians and using red light lasers on their muscles and skin and getting the same kind of effects in terms of recovery. So I looked into it further and I realized what they were doing is they were optimizing the photoelectric effect by minimizing their risk of blue light. So one of the things I think that can help best athletes is to use CT with a combination of probably red light laser therapy and a combination of improving their magnetic field by maybe using a magnetico sleep mattress to improve, you know, their recovery. And I've been doing this myself now for quite some time. That's why I mentioned to you earlier about the red light bulbs. And believe it or not, even the red light bulbs have an effect on your salivary melatonin level if you use them long enough. And, you know, not to get too graphic here, but when I was a big fat man, I used that red light when I was buck-ass naked in my house, surrounded by it, and I found that it had a pretty dramatic effect on my labs. So I think athletes could use this to their advantage, because these days red light therapies are pretty cheap. You can find them on Amazon. You can find them on Google. You can even find red light lasers. We even have a group, if any of your listeners are interested in joining it, there's a group on Facebook called the Circadian Biohackers Group. One of the members on my site named Dan Koifman, he spells his last name K-O-I-F-A-F-M-A-N. He runs this group, and we are talking about all these factors in detail and the science behind them. There's a lot of published science in the chronobiology literature about this, and it really ties back to the circadian cycling between cortisol and melatonin, and ultimately to the photoperiod in the brain, which is controlled by the vitamin A cycle, and the photoperiod on the skin, which is controlled by vitamin D. And that's how vitamin A and vitamin D play a role with the sun's photoelectric effect. And a lot of people are shocked to find that from a biologic perspective, you know, skin and nerve comes from the same tissue from the embryo. It's called neuroectoderm. And it's not lost on me or many of my followers that the vitamin A cycle and the vitamin D cycle are distinctly tied to Einstein's photoelectric effect. And I think the more we start to realize that we optimize this, the better we get. So if you know you're a modern human and you're affected by a lot of blue light and a lot of modern technology, I would tell you as an athlete, especially if you're a skier, UCT, get out there, take your clothes off, jump in the ice, and lay in the snow, and go in the water. But if you're still having soreness in different muscles, consider getting yourself a red light laser and putting it over the muscles that ache you. I'm a big believer in also using acupuncture and transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. You can also buy those over Amazon too. They tend to help as well. So those are probably my biggest tips right there.
Excellent. And one thing, when I'm eating, people often comment how much fat I eat, and it's probably from the advice with coconut oil and different grass-fed meats you discuss. But could you explain just for listeners why ketones is better energy source than glucose?
That's a pretty simple one. And now, it's simple for me. It may be hard for some people to hear because they've been indoctrinated with the dogma from my profession and from, in fact, from the paleo community that ketosis is somehow bad. Well, it's not. And I'm going to explain it by using an example that I use in my current blog. I want you to think about a human baby. Every baby that's ever been born to a human comes out fat. We normally have fat all over us. Our nearest evolutionary relative is a chimp. It shares 99.999% of the same DNA we have, yet they are born completely razor thin with no sub-Q fat. Here's the interesting fact. Chimp's brain is about 90% completely formed when it's born. A human brain is not formed completely. And why is that? It's not formed so that the head can fit out the vagina, because we're designed to have bigger brains. Well, the reason that our brains are smaller when we're born is we don't have any myelination on our brain. That's the thing that's missing. So why is a human baby born fat? Well, it's born fat because that sub-Q fat's going to be broken down and turned into ketones. What else is a human baby designed to make, or I should say eat? Designed to eat mother's milk. What is mother's milk designed to be filled with? Fat and protein. When you take the sub-Q fat of a baby and mother's milk and you mix it together, human children are designed to be raised and bred on a ketogenic diet until myelination is complete. Lorcan, here's the thing that's going to shock you the most. The human brain doesn't fully myelinate until you're 25 years old. And to prove my point to you, I don't know how it is where you live, but here in the States, no one can rent a hotel room or a car unless they're 25 years old, because insurance companies know that the frontal lobes, which lead to impulsive behavior, are not fully myelinated to that time. So if you begin to realize that human brain development is not complete until we're 25 years old, we're absolutely completely based from an evolutionary perspective to predominantly eat a ketogenic diet most of the time. Now, when can we eat carbohydrates? We eat carbohydrates when they grow in long light cycles. In most places in the world, including the equator, the light cycle is tied to the photoelectric effect of the sun. So if you think that you're designed to eat carbohydrates 24/7 like we're able to do in the modern world, you begin to see how that belief creates a mismatch, and that mismatch can lead to a problem. So why do I tell people they need to eat a ketogenic diet at the core basis? Because we are designed to have Ferrari engines in our head. Our brain means that we need to have a higher level of ketones. 70% of the myelin on the human brain is made up of fats. That's the reason why we need to maintain that. So your diet needs to be a high fat, moderate protein, low carbohydrate diet that should be eaten within the circadian signals of the place that you live on this planet. That's part of the reason why the further you get away from the equator and the closer you get to an Eskimo, they eat the most ketogenic diet, because they're eating probably 90%, at least they were when they were eating their natural diet. They no longer do that because they eat a Western diet. But even on the equator, the way the photoelectric effect works is works on a dry season and a rainy season. What people don't realize is here where the second part of the laws of nature come in. Water is basically a magnetic dipole that actually is liquid sunshine. So when we have rainy seasons on the equator, that's when seasonal foods come in. And when the dry season comes up, that's when animals tend to migrate to proteins and fats. So no matter where you go on this planet, if you're an animal, you are designed to eat, you know, based on your biology. For humans, we're designed to be more ketogenic than we are to be an obligate omnivore. We can eat different things, but just because our brain allows us to import bananas from Chile doesn't mean we should eat them on December 31st in the Northern Hemisphere.
Perfect. Thanks, Jack. Okay, last point now. I just want to highlight in your book, EpiPaleoRx, you linked autism with leaky gut and wheat consumption. I'll just get you to explain that briefly, if you can.
Well, this is the next step that I'm taking the blog into. And this doesn't have an easy explanation. But I'll try to be as quick as I can. Ken, I'm going to give you the 30,000-foot view of how this works. Most people in the paleosphere believe that autoimmune diseases are tied to the diet. I'm going to tell you that most autoimmune diseases are completely tied to the electromagnetic field that we live in, and that risk factor there causes the leaky gut and causes a leaky brain-gut barrier. Now, I want to invoke something that we talked about earlier, so you get this. Autoimmunity is caused by the electromagnetic environment that we're in. And I'm going to explain it to you. I told you before that a human child is born with sub-Q fat to myelinate their brain. What else, Lorcan, do you know about a human child when it's born in the first 6 months of its life? It has no immune system. It has to rely on the mother's immunity through her antibodies, through breastfeeding, in order to stay away from being sick, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so when you understand this, that means that when the electromagnetic field is diminished at all, it's because our myelin is not performing at a high level. So in the modern world, since we have this cavity that's been created between Earth and the ionosphere that's filled with electromagnetic radiation, it causes a tremendous effect on our central nervous system cells. And that effect is that it dehydrates myelin. What Becker found in his work in the 1950s and 60s on limb regeneration research on salamanders, on guinea pigs, rats, and humans is that the DC electric current that comes, that allows humans to regenerate bone comes from the interfascial water around Schwann cells and myelin in the brain. So electromagnetic radiation blocks that effect. So in other words, you become dehydrated, your myelin begins not to work as well, just like a baby. What effect does that have on the immune cells in the brain? These are called microglia cells. The oligodendroglioma cells that form myelin in the brain become disrupted. How does that happen? Well, the first effect of EMF is the blood-brain barrier gets leaky, just like the gut does. It allows inflammation in. How does the inflammation initially occur? The inflammation initially occurs because calcium is let out of the neuron. And as calcium is let out, it's in ionic concentration or ionic balance with magnesium. When calcium efflux occurs, that changes the transmembrane resting potential of the neuron. When that changes, we lose the ability of circadian signaling. What occurs at the cellular level? Molecular crowding happens in the cell. In other words, the cell gets more crowded. We have a synonym for that in biology. When we get molecular crowding in a cell due to dehydration and due to these changes on the cell membrane, it's called inflammation. Two chemicals build up in the brain. Those chemicals are NF kappa beta and IL-6. Both of those chemicals are directly tied to the sleep cycle, both melatonin and cortisol. I think you can start to see where this is starting to go, where all these things tie together. Autoimmunity is directly tied to the ability to regenerate the T helper 3 cells and the T helper 17 cells in the microglia of the brain. If you don't know anything about the immune system, T helper 3 cells and T helper 17 cells turn cells on for autoimmunity and turn cells off for autoimmunity. So if you have the cells turned on that make antibodies and tag cells all over the body, this is how the immune system begins to cause destruction. If you can't turn the signal off because you've lost the DC current from your myelin, this progresses on. And after enough tissue is damaged, you go on from just having a minor immune problem, say like eczema or a surface problem on your skin, to developing full-blown lupus or, let's say, MS or Hashimoto's. And the effect happens in the organ system where the altered field occurs. So this can happen in the thyroid. It can happen in the skin. It can happen in the bone. It can happen anywhere. It depends which circuit is involved. And this is where understanding quantum physics makes a big rule, I should say big factor. And it's part of the reason why people don't really understand where autoimmune diseases come from. And this is part of the reason why I told you earlier on in our discussion that I'd have you and your listeners go look at that March 15, 2013 blog about the EMF prescription, because I actually mentioned this in that blog post. Now, do I give you all the details that I just gave you in this podcast? No. Am I going to get into that in a lot of detail in my next blog series, where I talk about actually how celiac, how Hashimoto's, and how autism actually forms? I'm going to get into those nitty-gritty details. You already got a bird's eye view, but I can tell you it starts with the loss of the myelin function through the dehydration that affects the DC current that alters your ability to regenerate. And all of these effects have been experimentally found by Robert O. Becker on bone. The same effect happens in the central nervous system. When you change neuroimmunity in the brain, that sets the stage for all different types of immune conditions. What people don't understand about the EMF environment is it causes a leaky gut and it causes a leaky blood-brain barrier. On my site already, I've written 17 different blogs called the brain-gut axis. The brain and the gut are directly tied together by a nerve called the vagus nerve, and the gut has actually more neurons in it than actually the human brain does. And there's a reason for this. The way the brain is able to decipher the photoelectric effect from food is basically transmitted through the gut into the brain. And that's the reason why there's a permeable barrier in the gut and an impermeable barrier in the brain. Very complex stuff, but the field that you live in really is the true cause of where autoimmunity comes from. Most people in the paleo community believe it's all tied to the diet, and it's not. You cannot get an autoimmune disease without having alterations in your gut permeability, in your brain permeability, that ultimately changes the DC current that sets the stage for the inability for you to activate your T helper cells in your thymus. That's where it comes from.
That is brilliant, Jack. Thanks a million for coming to talk to me. When can I expect the next book?
Well, actually, believe it or not, I'm already working on two of the next books. The next book is actually going to be probably quite a bit different than the first one. People have asked me, because they follow me on Facebook on my Dr. Jack Cruz site, I post a lot of interesting thoughts and quotes. And people have asked me, they want me to post, or I should say publish a book of some of my best quotes. And I think I'm going to do that. I've actually kind of decided not to do it for a long time, but just in the last month or so, I've had so many requests for it. I think I'm going to do that. That should be out fairly quickly. And the other book I'm working on is a book of quantum biology. Actually, how the three laws of nature directly explain what we believe in biology and chemistry. And, you know, you got a little flavor of that today on the podcast, and I think you're getting a big time taste of it, you know, if you're reading the EMS series or the quantum biology series on the blog.
That is absolutely brilliant, Jack. Thanks a million for your time, and I'm sure I'll chat to you again.
Okay, Lorcan, it was great talking with you.
Take care, my man. Take care.